We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. In Saturday's NFBC main event, League Number One, there were a lot of us that have podcasts, guys that are in the fantasy sports industry. Four of them are here today. Myself, we've got Rudy Gamble from Razzball. We've got Brock Nelson and Maddie Davis from Fade the Noise. We also had Batflip Crazy, but Toby's out learning how to surf in Costa Rica. Could not join us right now. Hey, everybody, welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Jeff Erickson here with Rudy Gamble from Razzball, Brock Nelson from Fade the Noise, and Maddie Davis from Fade the Noise. Guys, thank you so much for doing this. I had fun seeing you in Vegas doing the live main event. Fun might not be the right way. Well, it was fun. It's always fun to do a fantasy baseball draft, but it was a hard draft, too. So, see Rudy walking up to our table. I knew he was in town for the draft, but... Great. No, I don't think any of us realized it right away that Rudy was in our league because Rudy has a real name. Rudy Gamble is not his name. We won't disclose it because we want to let him maintain his advantage. But he also had a partner in his partner.
It's Lindy Hinkleman my real name.
Phil Dussault. Casey Cha. No, you can't pass for Casey Cha.
I did dig the Heisenberg look that Lindy had going this week, that weekend. It was a good look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your partner, Errol Thompson is listed as like the primary owner. So I was like, okay, Thompson, whatever. Okay, fine. Hey, no, it's Rudy. Crap. Another good player. Not that Errol isn't a good player, but I don't know him. I know Rudy. Don't like that. So you guys, you'll go ahead and tell the story. You didn't even realize it during the draft.
Totally did not realize it. You know, I saw the Razzball shirt, I thought, oh, I wonder if he knows Gray,
What a fanboy.
And then, Rudy, I can't remember. I'd seen like a picture on Twitter at one point or another. Of course, we'd never met. I met a lot of people this weekend that I'd never met before, which is always exciting. But, just kind of didn't even think about it. And then Maddie and I were out at dinner. What was that place called?
Bardot.
I don't know. It was in some fancy hotel that I couldn't find it. I walked around for hours. It was crazy. We were kind of sitting at dinner. I can't remember what Matt said. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it just dawned on me. I just stopped eating all of a sudden. I turned and I looked at him. I was like, dude, that was Rudy. He was sitting right next. Oh, no. Rudy wrote something on Twitter that clued me in. I was like, Maddie, that was him sitting right next to you. Oh, totally.
I believe we were two picks away from each other. So we sat pretty much in the same corner and I had zero clue until after the weekend. And then I believe on Monday, this Monday, I messaged Rudy and apologized for acting like a blowhard that I had no clue who he was or anything like that. So,
yeah, good time. The best part of this bit is I was in a main event with Maddie last year. So it's like a 13-month con.
That's beautiful.
And the thing was, like, so I met John. So I was at the Friday night party, not greeting people by like my, and I didn't tell anyone. I didn't tell you were in my league. Yeah, I talked to you, Jeff, and I didn't tell you. But I talked to John Bossa for like 20 minutes. And then just like, hey. But I got to the draft thing. It's like, I don't need to be giving anyone any extra info. Now the ruse is gone.
Well, it's on this table. And you know, face and name to face now, it's true. A little bit.
That's right. Next year, I'll mow.
Next year, Maddie and Brock will remember you. So there is that. So
we got. I'm just going to tackle you when I see you.
Let's talk about the whole notion of us being quasi-public figures. Come on, it's our small little niche of the world. Everyone knows our stuff is out there, right? How do you feel like that affects you when you're drafting?
It doesn't necessarily. I like to keep an open book, to be honest with you. So when I'm writing something, I do keep everything NFBC centric and geared towards the drafts that I'm in. So I have a better grasp on what I'm talking about or writing about. And then when it comes to the podcast, I keep it the same way. If we're talking about a main event or an online championship draft or whatever it may be, I'm going to be rather honest, and I'm just going to hope that I'm able to execute when the draft comes. Because I like to give the listeners, followers, readers, you know, my content that I'm providing, or if they're paying for it at FTN Fantasy. So I keep it 100, as the cool kids say.
I've never been a cool kid, so I've never used that phrase. But Brock, how about you?
I was definitely I was kind of excited. You know, public figure. Those are your words. I'll kind of leave that there. But I was I did feel pretty cool when you know, I bumped into Toby before the draft, and we chatted for a second, and he kind of made a joke. He was like, "And I'm going to go draft pitching early, and you're going to go hard on the hitters early." And he kind of knew that about me, so I did kind of feel like a public figure for a second there, because Toby knew that about me. So that was kind of cool. But yeah, the effect, I don't really see much of an effect on it. I mean, there's like real zoom out kind of overarching ideas that I feel like I might know about some of you guys, you know, such as Toby going hard on pitching or JT Realmuto earlier. But other than that, you kind of got to stick to your draft, you know?
Yeah. I just feel it's like a cost of doing business.
Yeah,
for what we do. And so I just try not to think about it, but I feel particularly in this format, everyone's got their lane and they've got their plan. So it doesn't matter. Like, I feel like you could pretty much before like each round be like, "Hey, these are three guys in my queue." It wouldn't matter.
I'd agree in the main. I think when I do the online championship, it's a little different.
Well, because are you doing like Beat Jeff leagues?
Yes.
Yeah, that's you're getting people that actually like, yeah, that is different. There's people that, you know, so that those are frustrating when like multiple people are using my draft room and using my rankings. For draft champions, at least like I do one or two a year where I go incognito.
Yeah.
Or at least go into a rando room instead of like people that actually like,
instead of a beat Rudy Gamble draft. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause they've been having a lot of success at it the last year or two. So it's like
beating you with your own projections, you know?
Yeah. We've got sharp readers.
Yeah. And that's a good thing. That means that your projections are working though. Right. So you got to look at it from that standpoint. Cause I definitely think that definitely happens in the beat leagues for sure. And I'll get someone like, yeah, well, and like, come on, you know, you guys are cruel. Like three picks in a row. Like, well, I just use your stuff. And you're like, okay, fine. That's fine. I get it. Let's talk draft order. Brock, you're down at the wheel. Did you want to be down at the wheel?
No, I got last pick, and spot number 15 was my last pick in KDS. Did not want that. You know, I didn't put a lot of thought into it this year. I couldn't really make a good decision there. In years past, it's been different. I think it was 2019. I had the wheel as my number one pick in KDS. Kind of different this year, though. I really want to get Trey Turner or Jose. I want to get some premium steals there. So I just kind of have earliest pick possible, and didn't work out. But I do feel pretty good about how I did getting Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman. I think Mookie steals 20 bases again if the hip's healthy. I mean, he really ought to. And having two guys at the top of one of the better lineups in baseball, I felt pretty safe about, you know, 100 or 240 runs, things like that. I was probably going to go first round Woodruff. I know Woodruff really hadn't been going in the first round, much until these mains. So I was hoping he would make it to me, and I was going to do one early pitcher there. But Matty Wood took him at number 11. So feel pretty good going Mookie and Freddie, though.
So, Matty, you got, I asked you this during the break. I'll ask you it now here, too. Two guys in the same draft from Fade the Noise, FTN. And did, you know, I know when I, you know, Scott Jensen and I asked Greg not to be in the same league. You know, we do the podcast together. We talk all the time. You know, he, you know, Brock just mentioned how you took Woodruff from him. I know it wasn't because of Brock's rankings or anything, but is it an extra challenge to be in the same league with someone from your same company?
Yeah, a little bit. I actually asked Greg and Tom and them to not put me in one main event with Zach Betancourt, actually, and somebody that doesn't work at FTN. That's somebody that I share extensive details with, auction values and projections. We go pretty deep together, and we pair up and do a couple of main events together. And while Vlad and Brock and the crew, we discuss things, but like Rudy was saying in the main event, we kind of stay in our own lane, and we're going to do what we've been doing since this winter in preparing for these moments. So it does make it a little bit difficult. In a lot of these main events, well, there was only three before this Saturday. Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman were falling around where I was picking in 20th overall in the second round. And I was hoping Mookie or Freddie would make it to me until I realized Brock was picking 15th. And I pretty much damn well knew he was going to get both. And so then at that point, it was like, okay, would Devers be there? Would Luis Robert be there? You know, one of those outfielders that we saw go right before Devers. And so I was left with the choice of Rafael Devers. And I'm okay with that. The other option that I was looking at was Trevor Story, but I decided to take a bit safer of a floor and less stolen bases with Devers.
Rudy, you had a partner at the draft. I did too. Your partner, Errol Thompson, is he a writer at Razzball? I don't know the name.
Nope. He was just a reader who also played at FBC, and he offered to take me, you know, to partner a while back. So we've been doing it since, on and off for like 6-7 years.
Okay.
But I think we hit a stride in 2019. And went off the stride in 2020, just like we all did in real life. And then, but 2019 and 2021, we've been doing, quite well. Feels like, you know, what is one break away from a really big finish.
When you have a partner like that, tell us a little bit more about your draft prep when you're like talking through your picks. How do you go about planning things out?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of the strategist. And then we just kind of go through, and there's just certain players that if one of us has a strong feeling towards, we'll tend to defer. On the inverse, if there's a guy that we really don't like, but we tend to, like most good partners, I think we tend to agree more often than not. You know, so I think if one of us really went off script, like, you know, he was like, oh, I really want a reliever in the second round or something like that, it would be tough. But no, this draft went about as smooth from a, you know, partner management standpoint as one could hope, nice. Especially after he acquiesced with Seiya Suzuki in the 10th.
There you go. Homered yesterday, hitting his stride. We'll talk specifics about everybody's draft in a second, but first, a quick note from our friends at Fantrax. Are you looking for a new platform for your fantasy baseball league? Fantrax's free MLB Fantasy League Manager is the most customizable, easy-to-use, and feature-rich platform in the industry. Fantrax offers the most in-depth player pool in the industry, including minor league players. Fantrax offers Dynasty, Keeper, Redraft, and Best Ball leagues. Coming from another service, Fantrax makes the process easy. Fantrax can import any of your current leagues and customize if needed. Sign up for free today and be entered to win Fantrax's MLB Game Day experience, which includes tickets to any MLB regular season game for your entire league and $1,000 towards travel and accommodations. All you have to do is host your fantasy baseball league on Fantrax to be entered. The more leagues you create, the more chances you have to win. Simply go to Fantrax.com/RotoWire and sign up today. I'm here with Brock Nelson, Matty Davis, and Rudy Gamble. We're talking about our NFBC main event league. Toby Gaven, Batflip Crazy, was in this. Can't wait to make it today. But he is, you know, he drafted right next to me, and that was a big challenge. Knowing, I know Toby was going to go Garrett Cole. We knew that going second. I talked to him the night before. He told me he was going to go Garrett Cole. Like, I needed him to tell me, but it was always nice to get the confirmation anyhow. So at least I had an idea what I was going to do at pick three. I knew what was going to be available to me. You know, all the way up until like an hour before the draft, I was still debating Jose Ramirez versus Bichette versus Soto. I mean, I think you make a case for any of them. But, you know, it's fun. After that, you don't know what the pick's going to be. And then you kind of have to zig from there. Maddie, you said, yeah, we talked about how you started with Woodruff and Devers. All along, did you want to get that ace in the first round?
Yes, absolutely. I knew that DeGrom, Burns, and Cole were going to be going right before that. And then it was a coin flip for me in regards to Buehler and Woodruff. The day prior in Las Vegas, though, I was in the $1,500 auction championship and bought Walker Buehler. So I figured I would just go with Woodruff on this one.
Do you guys like to diversify your aces, or do you like to stack? I mean, how do you like to play when you play multiple leagues?
Yeah, I like to diversify, especially because of the volatility at the position. There's a lot of injuries that can occur with the starting pitcher. And I have learned royally from, I believe, the 2017 season. I left three Vegas events with the same $40 or first round player. And it was a big, massive bust, and it cost me dearly. So when doing a bunch of leagues, I'm in 20 plus leagues already in the NFBC. I like to switch things up.
Yeah, for me, the way that I'm kind of going through things, especially like in those early rounds where Buehler, Woodruff, I don't think any of us have like a real strong stance, like, you know, oh, Buehler by a mile. I think it makes sense to kind of do that in different leagues where like the buy-in's kind of similar. Kind of makes sense. That comes from like a DFS background. You know, maybe you're doing a three-entry max tournament on DraftKings or whatever, and it, you know, and you like both of the aces going that night, kind of makes sense to, you know, use one of each in each league. Kind of the same idea there. So I think that makes sense to me and probably what I would have done as well.
Jeff, I must say, though, once we get later into drafts, that's when you're going to see my shares and exposure to a player increase, because it's later and you're able to take those shots. So I certainly have more exposure to guys later on in drafts versus, you know, the first three rounds or so.
Yeah. Yep. Totally.
Yeah. And for that matter, just being able to have access to the player. I mean, let's face it, we're all beholden to draft order if you're in snake drafts. I don't have any Trey Turner because I haven't picked first yet once this year. Not even in a mock, not even once. So it goes. But, you know, that's the way it is. Rudy, you drafted ninth. Do you like drafting in the middle? Was that a preferred spot for you?
I think in this league, yes. It would depend. Every year is just kind of different. For this year, nine was fine. You know, but yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have minded. Last year, I had nine in a one, and nine last year was Trevor Story. So hoping for a little better out of Kyle Tucker. But I think you could probably look at that first eight and say that basically everyone had got who they wanted. I'm not saying I didn't get what I wanted, but it was a pretty chalk pick, I think, for everyone. That I don't think, you know, that you know, maybe seven and eight were in on Burns, it fell. Couldn't have expected one of the first five. I know we had a contingency if Burns fell that we would have taken him. But then was on Tucker. Vlad Guerrero falling to 10 was not expected. And it was, yeah, a decision that I don't think I'll ever be fully confident on, that we stuck with the plan on Tucker. But a lot of that was because I had Alonso penciled in the fourth. And, you know, when I look and didn't, you know, like, I mean, so if someone said you should have gone Vlad there and then taken Buxton or O'Neill, both of which were not necessarily guaranteed to fall there. But looking at the board, I think that's a totally valid note. Yeah, Tucker, Anderson, Ray, Alonso were pretty much, I had them written down, or I don't use pen. So in a spreadsheet, like on the plane ride, like that like from the nine slot, that felt like pretty close to what could be expected. And knowing like in each of those things, you know, if Albies had a shot of falling, I thought there, you know, it would have been very tempting, probably too tempting if Robert fell. I figured Acuna wouldn't get past Matty, so that he wasn't a concern.
It's interesting seeing the different builds just between the four of us here. Three of us took closers in the second or third round. I took Hendricks at 228. Matty, you took Classe at 311. And Brock, you got Presley at 315. Rudy, on the other hand, didn't get a closer until the 11th round. And it turns out that might be a part closer.
You could argue I didn't get a closer in the 11th round either.
Yeah. Yeah. I was being, yeah.
You did. Yeah, get that's fair. I listened to you and Scott.
Well, you got
the other
got,
day. Yeah, it's, but
and you threw in some other guys. You got Cole in the you did it in volume in the last third of the draft. You got Solser, yes. Giles, Givens, Guerra, Diekman even maybe has a chance of getting some saves. Is that a way you like prefer to draft?
It is. I mean, I think every year, you know, starting, yeah, I mean, I think Maddie and you might start a little earlier than me. So I'm kind of in that Jan and Feb where mm-hmm. I'm thinking through strategies. And this year it's clearly I want starting pitching and volume because I just don't like last 10 rounds and Fab. I don't think it's going to be a fun year if you want starting pitching. So I want starting pitching in volume, particularly thinking SP4, SP5. I want to be kind of like the best in the room. And then getting my speed and average early. So you've got to give on something.
Of course.
And I'm willing to give. So it's, I don't feel great about it, but you know, it has worked in the past. So the only guy that in the first 10 that had a shot would be if, would have been Taylor Rogers in the eighth.
Which Brock took.
Yeah, he took on the turn. I mean, I was not reading the turns well. I mean, when you're at nine, that's a lot of – that's 12 picks. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, and that's one where it's like you pretty much look at most of the time and you're like, okay, I could have – I took Stanton in the seventh. He's probably taken if I let him go. Probably. I mean, I don't know. 12 picks is a lot. So I think at some point I got better about reading the turn, but – yeah, every once in a while it surprised me. I thought Chisholm might make it back to me in the sixth, and I did not think Rodon would make it back. I was surprised there, and I was right. I mean, six starters went between my fifth and sixth, and that it just ends up being, you know, in the preference shuffle.
Right. That's a round I wanted to shop in a lot for starters, and I did sure. get a couple of them and 5-6 in that area. Brock, on the other hand, you didn't get your first starter until the sixth. Kind of like me, similar in the early build. I started five, you got it at six. You did get Presley and Taylor Rogers in the two closers in the top 10 rounds.
Yeah, I pretty much go through all of draft season adhering to kind of a plan similar to what Rudy was just explaining there. For me, saves, as long as you get 60 of them, I don't care if the whip isn't great. I don't care if it's 60 strikeouts in 58 innings instead of 75 strikeouts in 50 innings. You know, it for me, the difference for me is, you know, drafting steals early can come with good batting average, can come with some home runs, and I think that's a huge difference. You know, getting your saves from a less talented reliever just doesn't really hurt me. So I spend all my DCs. I'm taking stabs on guys. I'm probably going to be out in front in home runs and RBIs and runs in all my DCs. And if I can just get those late saves to kind of pay off in one of those leagues, I'm going to be up there. But when I got to main event season, for me, it kind of shifts. I don't know. This was my first live draft in Vegas. I got a little bit of cold feet there. I got scared. You know, I drafted Bobby Witt, something that I normally wouldn't do. I kind of tend to go for old and boring over like the hype rookies. And I bought in on them this time. And kind of the same thing with saves. I got a little scared there. So I went out on a limb for me and drafted Presley there. And then, of course, like 4 hours later, got the report that His velocity is down 3 or 4 miles an hour, or so that was pretty great. But
yeah. Meanwhile, Cody Bellinger just struck out again. He's just decided to change his stance one more time. I got that one right after the draft. That was fun too. But
I wouldn't sweat that Bellinger pick yet, just yet, Jeff. Yeah, I really wouldn't. I wouldn't. I'd stay optimistic.
Yeah, I have enough exposure to him that I'm doing one more main on Saturday that I will not walk away from that draft table with him. But yeah, I'm not cutting him either. So, you know, or anything like that. Maddie, so you got the one closer early, and we kind of were similar in that respect. Get an early closer, then not get a second one for a while. I got one in round 15. At least I attempted to get one in McGee. It looks so far so good there, but.
Yeah, that was good news. That news broke well for you on that one.
Yeah, I got a little lucky. But I've been all along McGee over Duvall, at least. I don't know about if I, you know, you can't really claim victory for a pick at 213. So, it's, you know, if I really was that much of a seer, I would have taken him a lot earlier. But
no, you didn't have to.
Yeah.
No, yeah, you got to know your draft cost. Yeah.
And to be honest, I took McGee at that same spot last year. So I was full on T. McGee there. Yeah, so that was a good call. I guess one of the things I think about is that I wasn't in on Duvall. I thought he was anointed. Yeah. That was a lot of helium. But when you do that, then you've got to be willing to go in on the opposite. Just like, I don't know many people on team Roman Wick, right? Like you could be like, I'm mildly interested at the price. But no one's like all in on Wick. Okay, so we'll draft Givens. You know, I think the Giants being a good team and a good park. Yeah, I thought the McGee, you know, it had good thinking behind it. And you're right. He had 30 saves in a sub-1 whip last year. Exactly. Why was he vulnerable?
He throws one pitch, basically. I think that's the mentality. He's left-handed. I don't know. I'm left-handed, so I always get a little antsy when I get a lefty closer because I know they always get screwed because, we need a lefty specialist. But he's not really that. He doesn't have the arsenal to be a lefty specialist. He's more just get guys out.
He's a pitch specialist.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. One more note, an advertising note from our friends at Thrive. Experience a new way to play daily fantasy sports on Thrive Fantasy. Thrive Fantasy is an exciting player prop fantasy contest. With Thrive Fantasy, you can eliminate the countless hours of research and focus on only the top-tier athletes that have the biggest impact on the game. Sign up for Thrive Fantasy today and receive a free 6-month RotoWire subscription. Here's how you claim your free RotoWire subscription. 1. Visit rotowire.com/thrive. 2. Deposit a minimum of $10 and receive a 100% deposit bonus up to $100. 3. Play in your first paid contest and receive a free 6-month RotoWire subscription. All right, I'm Jeff Erickson here with Brock Nelson, Rudy Gamble, and Maddie Davis. All right, guys, I want to kind of hear, like, where were you getting a little antsy? Like, where did you feel like this was a tough – because this is always a tough room, right? You know, it's a live draft. Was there a point there that you were worried about hitting your spots, or did you hit things as you wanted?
Every moment – I felt antsy, all of them, all the moments, antsy. That's exactly how I felt the whole time. Yeah.
Even starting your first turn, huh? You were already feeling it.
Oh man, it was nerve wracking. I mean, just everybody that's in the room and then the setting, everything was different. It was something, but yeah, basically just all of it.
I felt like I was actually in cruise control, to be honest with you, until the fifth round. When team 9 took Berrios and team 10 took Rodgers, I was going to be very, very excited to obtain one of them to pair with Brandon Woodruff and Emmanuel Clase. And then I screwed up. That was my biggest mistake, to start the draft right there, was taking Brandon Lau ahead of, let's say, Logan Webb or Frankie Montas. Because then it forced me in the sixth round to take Blake Snell. And I was also comparing contemplating Carlos Rodon and Alec Manoa. If I did it again, I probably would take Manoa. But I have a mixture of all of those pitchers. So I guess I'm going to try and stay optimistic with Snell. But I wouldn't be in this position if I would have just went with Montas or Webb in the fifth round instead of instead of having that, I don't know what it is with Brandon Lau and I, but I can't quit him, and we just gravitate towards each other. So I stayed on brand there, I guess.
Yeah. The funny thing, I mean, like, you've both noted the fifth and sixth, or Jeff, you noted the fifth, and even Brock, you had noted the fifth and sixth with the Wit pick surprised you a bit. You surprised yourself, which is always fun. And yeah, for me, that was our. So, like, the first four was cruise control. We're getting to the fifth pick. I've got Chisholm penciled in, and you could argue with recent news or lineups that maybe dodged a bullet there. But that was the speed anchor. And I got this, like, sixth sense. I'm like, I don't like the way pitching's going. I had Manoah penciled in the sixth, which would have worked out. Was thinking Berrios or Rodon in the fifth. And just decide, you know, this is everyone, the way the pitching board is, let me go Berrios. You could see a ton of pitching went off the board. And then with the sixth pick, it was just the value on Rodon was too high. Chisholm goes. I think I might have taken Chisholm. Wit would have been interesting. India, it was between India and Rodon at the very end. But that put us a little that added the discomfort of I didn't feel great about our speed. The Tucker Anderson start gives us the foundation. Torres is not a guy I'm in on. And even like O'Neill Cruz, who I'm actually huge on, I think that pick was all tied to the fifth and sixth picks. I think I'm not drafting Chisholm and Cruz in this. Yeah. So if you drafted Chisholm and Cruz is off the board, I'm not touching Gleyber Torres. But I'm probably having to go pitcher heavier around there. And when I looked at when the ninth came around and I saw guys like Pablo Lopez going 9-1, I was like, I'm feeling really good now.
Yeah.
Because after securing four pitchers in the first eight.
Yeah. You guys, Rudy, you and Errol with Jose Berrios and Carlos Rodon, and then Jeff, you with Joe Musgrove and Alek Manoah. Those are my two favorite pairings when looking at the fifth and sixth round. And then to pat your back again, Rudy, leaving the sixth round with three SPs, and you still have with Tucker and Anderson leaving the first six rounds, I would say you're still on par with speed there. And then you're not having to chase starting pitching, which you'll notice every league starts to do in those rounds shortly after that.
Yep.
And there's spots, which you did take, to get your speed later. And I would much prefer to be somewhat chasing speed at that point versus trying to chase arms, because you can just totally hit some landmines.
Yeah, it was a tough room. Like, I think that my norm is the top aces are going to move up, but you're going to have but it's not going to move up throughout the draft. And I think all the guys that I would like in the top 16 rounds all moved up a little bit. Guys I like in the 11th went in the 9th. That kind of inflation. Kikuchi was, you know, we all have like one guy that we like that we're a little bit, you know, unique on.
Yeah.
So yeah, Kikuchi was one in the 14th, but even that, I was probably, you know, like Cobb and Desclafani went in the 14th. Like those guys a lot, maybe a round or two later, but you know, probably if I did this draft again, I probably would have pivoted to, well, I already had Rodon, but I still might pivot. It's this insane need to always diversify and feel like not get caught on the wrong side of a coin flip.
Well, the funny thing is I was forced to diversify. I love a lot of pitchers in that 200 to 300 range, and I just wasn't getting them. Yeah. You mentioned Cobb, Desclafani, Ober, all in the same round. Joe Ryan's another guy like. I like Kikuchi a lot. Give me all the Jays. Almost all the Jays. I've been on a lot of them, and I just wasn't getting them. You know, later on, John Gray's another guy I get offering, and you know, Matty took him. I like McKenzie a lot too. And that's the thing. It's like all my guys aren't my guys. They're community property guys. And unfortunately, you get a league with sharps. All of a sudden, they're looking at the same stats you are. They're looking at the same reasons, the same velocity measures that you are too. It's great to say that they're yours, but they're really not.
Not until you say their name first.
Yep, exactly. And that you have to say it quicker and sooner.
And it has to be your turn.
Yeah.
Darn it. That's so unfair.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when I tried to take Patrick Sandoval, 16 picks after he was mentioned from John Posma.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be my next thing. Next year, if people know who I am, I'll just pretend it's an auction for like some of the first round.
There you go. Oh yeah. By the way, John Posma's in our draft. Hall of Famer. Fun speech at the beginning of the draft.
Really good. Yeah. The speech was fun. I was cracking up. It was good.
It was clever. He got a lot of good players too. I thought, you know, every time he mentioned a name, like, oh, man, there's another one that I thought I may be able to get again later. Now I know I can't get it later. I expect my next draft on Saturday to be better, but there'll be other news that'll change things. So you never know. I felt like I was chasing speed the whole time. And, you know, I make some decisions here and there. Like I'm the idiot that let Toby get Buxton at 4-14 ever after the draft. How could you let Toby do that? I like Will Smith a lot too. I'm big on getting either Smith or Real Muto in the fourth. Like if it's available to me, none of you guys did the early catcher thing. Is that by design? Is that your normal draft strategy? How do you guys feel about early catchers?
I don't do it.
Okay, that was easy.
I never really have, Jeff, and I've succeeded with it before. Obviously, or I wouldn't be here today. It's just the draft capital, the amount of injury risk that comes with the position. One foul mm-hmm. pitch that hits off a wrist, and it's, you know, you got JT Realmuto's out with a broken wrist. Knock on wood. It's just too scary for me. A lot of those guys outside of Realmuto aren't stealing bases. Most of them, besides like Will Smith and Sal Perez, are, you know, below average in batting average. The counting stats might not be there because of the lack of speed and where they hit in the order. So there's just a lot of components for me when weighing what else is available at those moments in drafts where they're simply too rich for me. I would just rather try and pop and get lucky on, like, I always use the example of the Yan Gomes, Devin Mesoraco year. Having both of those guys wait, you know, 20th plus rounds, you know, in the draft and hitting on those, because we see it each and every year that some of these catchers that go later will pop, they will get more playing time, you know, the home run to fly ball rate and some of those, you know, a little bit of luck included, and you're going to get a profitable player at much later in the draft. So it's a draft capital thing for me.
Yeah, and for me, I would have considered Varsho in the seventh because he's going to get to play in the outfield, maybe some right. DH. So I liked Varsho there, but knew that was unlikely. And it was a bit of a departure. I was expecting maybe a 15th round catcher, but Tyler Stevenson, I think there was a odd thing where Stevenson and Ruiz fell maybe like two rounds, I want to say, below ADP.
I noticed that on Ruiz, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and and Stevenson in particular kind of intrigued me, just because he's already gotten in like a year's worth of reps, so I don't have to worry about kind of the rookie questions. And so grabbing him in the 13th, that was by far the most surprising guy in my top 18. Just about everyone else I would have, well, and Gleyber Torres. Those would have been and if you told me Gleyber Torres, like, oh yeah, didn't get Varsho or Chisholm, but like, I would have never guessed Stevenson. I'm actually a little surprised as a Reds fan that you didn't, I guess, having Will Smith, you didn't want to go double catcher or you right. just had other things to deal with.
Exactly. That's, and when you get the early catcher, you really can't get a second one early. I mean, then you're talking about draft capital. I think there's a qualitative difference between Smith and Realmuto over the rest of the body of catchers in terms of what they do and in terms of plate appearances too. I think they're getting a lot more. That's all. So, yeah, I made that decision. It did cost me though, and you know, it cost me speed. That was when you're getting an early catcher, unless it's Realmuto, even Realmuto, you're Varsho. Giving up something else. Yeah, or Varsho, you're giving up something else, whether it's saves or a starter or speed. And in my case, it was speed. Joey says that one of the drafts, there was a guy who went double barrel catcher at the wheel, turns 2-3. I would not do that.
Do not recommend that, Joey.
Yeah, no. I don't know. You know, in the past, I've never really spent on catcher For me, it's been go past the 20th round and try and get 400 plate appearances. You know, I have had tons of Yadier Molina over the years. He just, you know, every year he gets the volume, you know, 60, 70 runs, you know, 60 or 70 RBIs from like the 20th round or something like that. And that's just totally fine with me. But I will say that taking one of those earlier catchers, the two that you mentioned, Jeff, was at least a consideration of mine this year with the DH for the National League. I think Will Smith is going to get an extra few plate appearances out of that. If Real Muto's healthy, same thing for him. And I think that does make a difference. And then the two catchers that you mentioned too, those are National League guys. I like the chance the National League guys, I think they'll be, they have been a little bit underpriced this year. And this is the one year that I was at least considering some of those earlier catchers. I have a couple for the first time. I've just never gone early on catcher though. But
for the people not seeing the draft board, the two catchers that I obtained were in round 24, Joey Bart, and round 29, Jorge Alfaro. So shake the dice and roll them.
Yeah. We almost left the room with it. Yeah, we have Yan Gomes as a second. That basically is like a placeholder. Like, like he's one of those like seat fillers. You just sit there for a bit, Yan. You might be replaced. But yeah, I've had this. I'm not afraid to wait on even two catchers like you did. I think my big guy was Christian Vasquez in 2019. I think I got him in the first fab even in one league. And then that was the one year where he actually like
put together
some power.
Hey, he led the Red Sox in stolen bases last year, didn't he?
he does have that sneaky like 5-7 stolen base speed. Yeah.
I do end up get that Vasquez. From Alfaro. I've often gotten Vasquez in the past this year.
Yeah.
So I like where he typically goes. The other part of that equation, you know, everyone was coming to Toby. How did you get Buxton? How did that go? Well, we all passed on Buxton.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it wasn't just me. The whole room passed. I mean, he has a third round ADP price, and he went at pick 59 in our draft. That was the max pick. Why? You know, I'll be honest. I didn't even think about taking him. I was so fixated on Will Smith, and I knew I'm like, I'm sweating. Okay, I get my ace in the fifth round because I don't want to get my first starter at pick 87. So please, Musco, have come back to me. I wasn't even looking at Buxton. That's kind of an oversight for me. Was it a purposeful pass for you guys?
You mentioned on the pod, I think on Monday with Scott, and you guys kind of talked about just how far he was falling. And I didn't know he had fallen that far relative to the other mains until you mentioned it on that pod. During the draft, I didn't even, you know, kind of like you, just wasn't quite on my radar. Figure he's going to go too early, you know, for my liking, and slip right past me.
Yeah, I had my mindset similar to Rudy. Said he had penciled in Pete Alonso in the fourth round. For me, at pick 50 in the fourth round, it was Chris Bryant. And for whatever reason, I had already thought Buxton was just gone. That's just a total rookie mistake. Not that I would have just auto-picked and clicked Buxton over Bryant or anything like that. It would have probably taken me the full 60 seconds to figure out which one I would have went with. But now knowing, you know, Devers and Buxton having a little bit more speed, that sounds a little bit nicer there. So, I'll be comparing the two rather closely this year.
Yeah, I don't know if I had Alonso, like I said, penciled in. If maybe I had Vlad Guerrero, I would have had to really, but I think I might have ended up with O'Neill over Buxton. I'll be honest, I think the value where Toby got him is good. I understand the upside. I don't think he's going to run that much. It just seems silly for a guy who hasn't been able to stay healthy. Like, why is he going for 25 stolen bases? The power upside, the bat is great. That's why I'd like him. And you could see him as a guy who's going to give you 15 stolen bases. My head going into the draft was more on Chisholm because that's a guy I think has 30 plus stolen base upside. And if Buxton does that, I mean, it feels, did he sign a long-term contract yet?
Yes, he did.
Then he might as well go for it.
7 years, $100 million.
Yeah. So Maybe he's got that, you know, like, but I could see him doing like just getting the 500 plate appearances, like past that barrier first. And then once he's got that under his belt, like next year, maybe is his, because I got to think these players are like, I'd like a 30-30 season. And now, I mean, like, I know Moncada just was a monk. Who just said? Yeah. Oh, no, Aaron Hicks.
Aaron Hicks.
Yeah. He wants talking to go 30-30. Yep.
It's like, yeah, 30 games, 30, yeah, 30 times games. On base. But I could totally see a let's just say, in the most nicest way, a freak like Buxton, an athletic just specimen, you know, thinking, I got to get one of those. I'd like to have one, say I'm a 30-30 guy. That's an awesome club to be in.
Yeah.
I have Buxton projected for 16 stolen bases, which is 9 more than Bryant. So
there you go.
I don't know. Pick and choose what you want. I think Bryant's batting average floor is going to be a little bit higher this year in Colorado. And then one of the other things people talk about with these hitters that hit in Coors Field, similar to Nolan Arenado and Trevor Story, we'll use those two as the big examples, is, well, look what happens when they leave Coors Field. They have to acclimate and adapt hitting on the road because of the decrease in altitude, et cetera. But the thing that's different with Chris Bryant is he didn't start in Coors Field. He hasn't played his career to begin in Coors Field. It's not like he's acclimating on the road outside of it, whereas he started his career in Wrigley Field, hitting in the NL Central, et cetera. So I don't think for him, when he leaves to the other parks, obviously seeing the balls a bit different at Coors, and he's going to be doing that for half of his games. But I just don't think that the home road splits might be as extreme as they were for some of the other hitters in Colorado. Rudy turned into a robot.
Yep.
He's on reverse.
Yeah. He's got. Is that any better for Rudy? Now he's muted himself.
Rudy and rewind was.
Okay. Is that better?
There you are.
Yes. You're back. Ooh, we got Rudy back.
I ruined the joke. Like, Bryant's used to the altitude. He's like 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm already like, I've already seen curveballs through the clouds. It ain't that hard.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Bryant pick. I'm with you on it. And I obviously, because I got Grichuk in the 15th.
Which, that was annoying.
I like that.
Yeah. I mean, good pick. But,
I like the annoying part. Nothing better than telling people like, God.
Harrison Bader in the 15th pissed me off. I see everybody else's main events, and he's going in the 17th, 18th, and 19th. Zero chance he would have made it that far in our draft because I love him. And Doug Mose snipes me a couple picks before I get the chance to obtain him.
But, Bader, Grichuk, Jesus Sanchez all in a row. I like all three of those picks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a really interesting outfield run.
Yeah.
But I mean, I always find like looking at outfielders more fun than looking at the pitchers and where you take your shots. And
exactly.
And cause it's hard. I like to use that as the foundation for a team and looking at that, because there's so much flexibility. You can always find a way to start them somehow. So it is interesting looking at how people build on that.
It is. I want to ask you guys what's going to be like your most critical player. But first, we got a quick note on from our friends at Vivid Seats. Baseball is back. That's right. An entire glorious season, all 162 games. And with live events resuming, you can actually be there to catch all the action in person with Vivid Seats. Every backdoor slider, every round tripper, every doubleheader can be experienced live. And with Vivid Seats rewards, you can start earning free tickets from your very first purchase. Just buy, collect stamps, and redeem. It's that easy. From behind the dugout to up to the upper level, Vivid Seats has you covered for all the games that matter to you. Pro tip, buy tickets for your whole group, split the bill, and make progress towards your free ticket even faster. Just visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, live. Life happens live. Thanks to them. Also, quick note from our Blue Wire sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We record on the Blue Wire Network. Thanks for their hosting us. Hopefully, thank you for indulging their sponsorship. All right, guys. For me, it's an I'm going to ask a question like, who's the most critical player? It's an obvious one for me. I got Tatis at 11-3. I didn't plan on getting Tatis. He was not like part of the plan. I didn't have him in pencil or pen on a spreadsheet, but kept slipping. And we get come after the first break. I'm like, I'm going to do the damn thing. I didn't really plan on it, but I thought that how often do you get a chance it could be the number one overall upside? So took that chance. Obviously, him coming back in June and hitting for power would be very, very nice for me. But so that's a pretty big aspect of my team. Plus, it forced me to wait on other middle infield options. So although I didn't actually wait that long after that, but you know, it there's a cost, obviously. So he's a huge, huge thing for me. How about you guys? Start with Brock. Who's a guy for you that, like, you know, he's kind of a fulcrum guy for you?
Okay, I kind of hate that this is like a non-answer in a way, but I have a couple starting pitchers that I took that I think all I need is one of them to really pay off. All I need is health out of one of these guys, and when those guys fit in with the top three guys that I took, I'm going to feel really good about my pitching. So Luis Severino, who has not started out the preseason well, but nonetheless, he's on the mound. So an arm like that in the 11th round, that's one thing. Zach Gallen, who I've never really been a fan of. He's always kind of hurt, but he fell, I think, almost five rounds in ADP from where he was going. I got him in the 17th. It was like, I don't like him. He's not a target of mine. But if it's in the 17th there, and also given I kind of skipped out early on starting pitching, I think if either one of those guys come out and can put together a solid season, it's really going to pair up well with I went earlier with a couple bulk guys, Eovaldi and Montas. I expect 180 innings out of those guys. And, you know, so those guys and Michael Kopech is the third one there. If I get 140 innings out of him, I mean, I took a couple chances on pitching. Because I went a little harder on hitting early, as I typically do. And if any of those guys pay off in a big way, then I like my pitching in addition to my hitting. So that's my answer.
Maddie?
Yeah, I could ramble off about 12 players that are going to be the most significant. Yeah,
tough question. Yeah, doesn't always apply.
Clear and concise, it would be Blake Snell being the SP2. I was hoping for one in the fifth round of the Berrios Rogers tier. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. So I had to get uncomfortable and push that SP2, which I would have preferred to already have one. So Blake Snell, my eyes are going to be on him big time. And then way late, how about round 28, Hector Neris, who I have 10 shares of now, and I believe 50% of my leagues. If he's able to obtain the role, sorry, Brock, if he's able to obtain the role, the contract that they paid him, if you guys look how much they paid him, I know that it doesn't matter what he's doing with the minor leaguers, but he's driving buses. He's paying for food. Dusty Baker loves him. The Houston Astros are already clamoring for him. He has the stuff. He has had the role in the past. Velocity things aren't going good for Presley. And in every single draft I've had the opportunity, at least 50% of them I have came away with Hector Neris with the team concept. And if he does get the opportunity, I think that he could take it and run away with it. And if so, him and Class A could be some pretty lethal.
So, somebody on Twitter predicted he would be the Astros closer on opening day like 2 months ago. And I remember
Rob.
Yeah.
And that was in my text messages probably 2 months prior to that tweet. It was Rob DiPietro, a good buddy from the East Coast Deadpool Hitter podcast. Great follow on Twitter. Great person.
Great podcast.
Hell of a gardener as well. Yes. What's that?
Did he know Presley was injured? Because, I mean, Presley's down 3 miles an hour. Did he get in a motorcycle accident in January when the guys couldn't talk to their teams?
Quaaludes.
Really. That would be my guess, too. But, you know, motorcycles, whichever.
Bad eating.
We all have our, you know, people that we text with in the off season and during draft season and stuff like that. And it was late enough in drafts and the tidbit that Rob had texted me, I started to look into it more, started to look into Neris's contract and how he finished the season and why are the Astros paying this guy so much money, but they're letting go of other players and they're not paying up for additional stuff. But Neris was like their big prize possession this offseason and nobody really wanted to, you know, to talk about it, but Rob did. And I listened. I'm thinking if he doesn't even get the job, maybe he is a really legit leverage guy for the Houston Astros and he can churn out some cheap wins. We saw, you know, who was it last year? Paul Sewald was pretty solid in that role and a couple other guys like that. So, yeah, shout out to Rob DiPietro, that Deadpool Hitter, for hooking me up with that one. And I've stuck with it since January or February. I've just kept drafting Hector Neris. So maybe it'll come to fruition.
Nice. You know, that's a good one. Although I feel for Brock on that. That's just wrong. I think part of the way I kind of draft is that you want to build a team that's like you've got a good base, but there's like a number of guys that you just hope like a couple go off. Because you know some are just gonna get injured or kind of flop. So like I think like Ray or Rodon definitely have Berrios, like, you know, I feel good on that as a core, thinking one might do better than expected, one's going to do worse. So I don't see anything quite there. I think it's just guys like Suzuki in the 10th. I mean, that I guess there's a lot of variance expected on him, like, because we just don't know what to expect. But I think, you know, if Suzuki has the type of year I hope for, guys like Cruz, Aaron Ashby, even like a 21st rounder in Sulzer, if I get 25 saves out of him, all of a sudden it changes a lot on the team. If I get, I probably put the plus minus on that at 23. Actually, the minus, I don't think he's going to get 48 saves. So as long as a couple of those guys kind of hit, I'm feeling really good. And just knowing that, you know, you look at your 11th to 20th rounds and half the guys probably aren't going to make it to the end.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we won't have 30% of our roster at the least, I would say. Like 30% of these players won't be on your roster come September. And that's like at the minimum.
Come June. You know,
so exactly.
Right. So it makes you really think about ceilings versus like worrying too much, especially after first 10 rounds, worrying too much about like, I have Jeff McNeil. What's the floor of Jeff McNeil? Is like, yeah, he doesn't make it past April on my team or third Fab period. It's like, that's fine.
Yep. Dog food. Yeah. And many of the later you get, the floor is the ocean. So, unfortunately that you just churn a little bit there, especially with no IL spots too. And you're already going to be holding O'Neill Cruz for a couple of weeks as the Pirates do stupid things. So now we have to kind of, you know, that's one less spot for you to have available too. So that's the other thing that's kind of a problem.
I mean, you got Tatis, I have Cruz. Yeah. The key you learn on those is only get one of those. And you could argue Aaron Ashby maybe is one of those. If he's not starting, it would really be a bad matchup week for me to put him in.
I think he'll be usable, Rudy, right away.
Yeah,
when you start looking at weeks and some of your tough starters. So like for an example, I know that it's just the weekend for the week one, but Buehler at Colorado, and he's not going to go more than 4 or 5 innings because of how they're wanting to ramp up starting pitchers, or John Grace pitching on the road against Toronto. Well, what if Aaron Ashby's, you know, piggybacking or getting the middle bulk work against the Pirates or, you know, the Cubs on the road or at home. And that's pretty usable. You snipe. I wanted him there.
That's another one. Well, yeah, that's one where like Julio Rodriguez was on my radar. So that if there's two guys Brock sniped, it was Rodriguez and Rogers. But yeah, that it felt like I think Ashby fell a little bit relative to others. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it felt like if I wanted him, I had to take him there. Going back, I might. The news seems to be pretty good right now in Julio Rodriguez. That might make us all look bad to let
James Anderson took him in the 13th last night.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean that just tells you that might have been a. I might have indulged too much for an SP7, but.
Rudy, did you hear about the main event drafter the other night? He drafted Team 11, similar to me, but he drafted Chris Bryant in the second round at pick 20 overall, where I got Devers. Glad and I were talking about it. And it's like, at that point, even if he grades out as your top five hitter or whatever, you kind of just got to go with probabilities and know the third round, you know, you still have a 75%+ chance or even more to get him.
There's the flip side of YOLO is kind of, or like FOMO is like, yeah, what's the first word in that? Is that what you want to be governed by?
Exactly.
And yeah, so much of like the draft season is like that feeling of like, I like a couple guys here and I you don't want to be beholden to that one guy. And yeah, like my draft wouldn't have fallen apart without Seiya Suzuki, even though that was like a target. But, I feel like the more you could think like that, it helps. Because otherwise, it's always like the guys creep up around. You could do it for a couple, and especially for certain skills. Like, but man, yeah, when you see the get your guys drafts, and you're just like, just be a little more disciplined. Don't worry.
Yeah. If you were to tell me that I was going to get Corey Seager in the 7th and Brian Reynolds in the 8th, I don't draft Chris Bryant or Brandon Lau in the 4th or 5th. I'm pounding two more pitchers there.
I can see that. Or maybe a speed play. No, I don't know.
I would have looked at Jazz potentially, but now the batting lineup thing's kind of getting in the back of my head there.
Yeah. Right. But you just don't know on that stuff.
Yeah. Right. And the problem is we don't have the gift of foresight. We don't know what the rest of the room is going to do and what they're going to give us. So, you know, we can't shadow draft this, you know, and you do one thing, it changes the Jenga pieces. You know, pull out that one, and who knows? They may react differently, take your guy anyhow. So you don't know for sure that's the way it's going to happen. So
totally.
All right, guys, we're going to wrap it up. We're about an hour here, and I know everybody's got their own days to do, and I've got the show. So want to thank everybody for listening. I apologize. This isn't we didn't get to some of the questions today. Typically, we will, but I didn't want to use these guys' time on that. But you can feel free to tweet at us at underscore Matty Wood underscore. At Brock Monster, at Rudy Gamble, and at Jeff underscore Erickson. We'll be happy to answer your questions that way. Thanks to everybody for listening. Have a great day.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks.